You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 25th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from MSNBC's All Things Trump ratings gift shop, which is adjacent to the MSNBC Why the Hell is Trump on TV All the Time Anyway? Indignation Cafe. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Someone's already done this, I'm sure, but it's the spam routine. We got Trump, Trump, and Trump, Trump, and Trump. I can have something with not so much Trump in it.
Oh, you know, thank you for reminding me. I did that with Palin.
Yeah, you did. That's
back
right.
It was all Palin all the time?
It was Palin all the time, yeah.
Well,
and actually, Sarah Palin is in our show notes for this week because she pushed out some word salad.
Yes, she did.
Comparing Hillary Clinton to the antithesis of Hillary Clinton, which in her mind is Dr. Ben Carson.
Yeah.
And I kind of agree with Sarah Palin about that, actually. The antithesis of Hillary Clinton is Dr. Ben Carson. You're darn tootin' it is.
They are the antitheses of each other. They certainly
yeah.
are.
Yeah. And you know, I was going to read some of her...
Salad of words?
Salad of words out loud. I read them that won't get, to their credit, republished transcript of her talking. Here's what she said about Ben Carson. And I'll just read this one sentence and then I'll stop. This is about Dr. Ben Carson.
Right.
It's a tough road in front of him. But as long as he keeps being candid and speaking truth and not letting political consultants or those around him who would ever want to kind of change his message, just not let anybody try to shape you and mold you into something that some consultant wants you to be, that's a big mistake.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It sure as heck is. And that sentence just left Earth's orbit.
Earth.
Like, you know, like SpaceX. It left, but it's not going to land here again. It's just gone.
It really is sad that American school children no longer diagram sentences, but this is why.
And she's, you know, Sarah Palin has become background noise.
She is background noise, and we've got more important things to talk about. I do have a philosophical question for you before we begin, Driftglass.
Crap. Okay.
If we mention that this podcast is schlong-free, does that mean it isn't schlong-free?
Oh, but it's not schlong-free. Schlong is the implied, implicit subtext of every one of our podcasts.
The schlong is always there.
It's always there. It's always there. It's always looking right at you. Now get that image out of your head. With our traditional Christmas podcast.
I gotta say, Greg Gutfeld on The Five.
Oh, okay.
I know, but he was really good.
Okay.
This week.
Nice.
He actually asked Eric, what's his name, that other one on The Five.
I have no idea.
Okay. Greg Gutfeld said, he was just tired of people on this network defending what Donald Trump said. And he went back and remembered John McCain and insulting a handicapped person and insulting women. And I mean, on and on. And he said, and now he said a word that I haven't said since I was seven and that we are not allowed to say on this network. And I'm tired of defending it. And everyone kind of on The Five was like, oh, well, you know, this isn't going to help him with women voters, you know. That was it. You know, it's like,
you know, he's just a straight shooter, Blue Gal.
To his credit, Greg went and said, I'm tired of the Trump-splaining, because that's what it is. So good for him. Got to give credit where credit's due.
I congratulate him for noticing the shithole that he helped create as he sinks into it.
The shithole that he works for and cashes a check. Yeah.
Congratulations.
That direct deposit is still going into your account. But hey.
I'm sorry that you regret that. That's, you know, wipe your chin and go back to work on Monday.
But there really is a theme
there
to
really
this.
Is.
This whole show, the media welfare sweet spot, you know, that you call it, of we just have to not say the R word about it, the party. Yeah, I think that's the title of our show. But go ahead and let's do. I don't know if you want to do a lightning round because you really want to spend some time on David Frum.
Yeah, regrettably,
but T. Boone Pickens, Kathleen Parker, Chris Matthews, Maggie Haberman, Maggie Haberman said, because she was talking about last Saturday's debate, which, you know, we can talk about also, this whole thing about whether Hillary Clinton lied or not. And Maggie Haberman said, this goes back to Saturday evening where Hillary Clinton at the debate talked about how Trump was the star of recruitment videos for ISIS. She didn't exactly say that, but that was the intention or the impression that everyone had.
It's out there.
And it's just, it's right. It is. It's whose rule is that?
Cokie Roberts rule.
Cokie Roberts rule. It's just out there.
It's out there.
Whether it's true or not, it's now just out there. Tommy Christopher of Mediaite really slammed her for that and said, well, jeepers, if only there was some group of people whose job it was to make sure that people knew exactly what Hillary Clinton said and corrected those impressions. Maybe some sort of, I don't know, report person. They could even have some means of communicating these report thingies to lots of people at once. Maybe we could look into that. Yeah, you know, it's, and to Hillary Clinton's credit, she swung back hard and showed the person in the federal government who actually analyzes ISIS videos saying, oh, yeah, no, Donald Trump is well loved by people that make ISIS videos. Trust me. He is. She is the analyst for ISIS videos for they didn't get into her position, but she is the analyst of ISIS videos.
She works for the Kenyan usurper, doesn't she?
The Kenyan usurper.
Of course she's going to say
yes.
That. What else
the Muslim Kenyan usurper. Right. The Muslim Kenyan usurper. Don't forget, he's a Muslim.
This is reaching these people is, I'm glad Greg, what's his name, feels some remorse over the horrible series of crimes he has abetted. Okay, it's too late. It's too late, guys. It's not too late for us. It's not too late for the country. But watching the rats leaving the ship and trying not to get their dainty feet wet on the way out is just hilarious. I mean, what we have left is hilarity, it's sort of gruesome hilarity. But
And I think what we have left too, I mean, you talked about this week, and this is getting personal, but when people send you things on Twitter or on email about, oh my God, look, someone went full drip glass, or someone said something liberals have been saying for 30 years, et cetera. And you said to me, I don't know why I need to write this again. You know, I've written this every day for 6 years, and you know, here it comes again. And I said to you, the reason you have to do it is the voice crying out in the wilderness. And the wilderness needs it to be out there, needs the truth to be out there. If this year has proven anything, it's proven that it's not just us, it's lots of people. But there is a need for an honest citizenry to be the media, because they're not being the media.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the subtext of what our lightning round is today is exactly that. There are the people who have who have successfully made a handsome living as reasonable conservatives, straddling the center, have now been pulled apart like wishbones.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room to straddle anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a term that I don't know if Paul Krugman coined, but he should get credit for it. Trumpenfreude.
Trumpenfreude.
You know, and he's like, you know, it's that simultaneously feeling vindicated for being shrill all these years. Like, and the fact that, you know, vindicated that centrists were naive. Dear Dr. Krugman, centrists weren't naive. Centrists had a business model to lie to the American people.
A brand to protect.
That's all. They're just
it's a brand to protect. That's what it is.
It's a breed of liar. As mm-hmm. the same way that Rush Limbaugh mm-hmm. is a liar for a living. David Frum is a man who lies for a living. He just tells a different higher class version of the same lie. But combined with the fear that, holy crap, this guy could be president, which I don't believe. But the point being that it is pointless and exhausting to pound away at the Limbaughs of the world, because they're not going anywhere. They don't listen to us. They don't care about us. They don't pretend to care about us at all. They don't even know we exist. They have fictional liberals that they bag on all day, every day, fictional socialist commune monsters that they scare their people with. But they don't know who we are. They don't care who we are, and they ignore us completely. It's the people like Kathleen Parker and mm-hmm. David Frum who have to sort of acknowledge that something is not right with the world if they don't want to be laughed out of their circles and laughed off their job, because they have to at least come up with some sort of plausible explanation for Donald Trump existing other than thank God he's finally arrived, which is basically the attitude of the right. So you have Kathleen Parker, who I wrote a little bit about this week, wanting to condemn Donald Trump, but not mentioning the R word, the Republican word. So it's just vague numbers of unreasonable people and belligerent people and folks out there who believe things. And she wrote an entire column without bothering to mention that this problem is a specific cancer located at the heart of her Republican Party, her conservative movement. It's been growing and metastasizing for years, and she's fucking well known. And you have to be blind not to see it. But she is a professional liar. This is a woman who, by the way, freaked out when she wrote one bad thing about Sarah Palin a few years ago.
And got raked over the coals. Absolutely.
Came out in droves. And she was like, and she wrote a whole column about how shocked and indignant she was and horrified that these people just came out of nowhere. And my only comment was, welcome to Liberalville. Welcome to what life is like as a liberal living under the conservative shadow of people like you for the last 30 fucking years. So I've been called that every day. As a matter of course, this is a matter of conversation. Just punctuation in a conservative sentence is insulting people like me, slandering people like me, and lying about people like me.
And bullying. And bullying.
And she got a little taste of that and shit herself and ran away. And then she gradually wrote herself back into the conservative good graces and has been writing that way ever since. And now she's once again faced with the fact that her conservative movement, her political party, is the problem. And the king of all this is David Frum. Skipping over to David Frum.
Go right ahead.
David Frum, who is really the poster child for wingnut welfare. David Frum has no business having any presence anywhere in the media.
Well, Charlie Pierce said he can have a presence after he cleans out some more. How many toilets does he have to clean out at Walter Reed before he can come back?
And bedpans at Walter Reed.
Bedpans at Walter Reed, and then he can come back and be on TV again. Yeah.
You know, David Frum wrote for Bill Kristol at the Weekly Standard. He wrote for Rupert Murdoch at the Wall Street Journal. He was the Bush speechwriter who coined the expression axis of evil. He's a friend to all the worst people in America. He wrote a book about the awesomeness of George W. Bush's presidency. He wrote a book with the unindicted war criminal Richard Perle on how to get rid of terrorism. And he worked for the American Enterprise Institute right up until he suggested that maybe Obamacare wasn't the end of civilization. And that's when they threw him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been skulking around the outskirts of conservative respectability, trying to get another paycheck. He worked for the Daily Beast for a while. His good friend Andrew Sullivan made room for him on his blog, and then I'm guessing got him a job at the Daily Beast. But as a card-carrying member of the wingnut welfare state, David Frum was not going to be allowed to go unemployed.
Yeah, miss a meal.
Miss a meal by his friends. So his friends made sure he always had work. He always had a place to be. He always, you know, his unshaven, you know, goofy ass tie on sideways self was always found a home at MSNBC and still does. And now he is back as the senior editor at The Atlantic, a once respectable magazine that now stinks of neoconservatism. And so David Frum has written a very passable article on what is going wrong with the Republican Party right now. That it's basically this schizophrenic system where hapless billionaires and the donor class have a set of priorities that involve nothing more or less than massive tax cuts for them, massive deregulation for them.
And a grand bargain with Social Security and Medicare.
A grand bargain that screws everybody but them. And legalizing a lot more immigration because they would like a lot more cheap labor. Thank you very much. Which is at odds with the wingnut base, who has been taught to hate government, hate immigrants, and hate a whole lot of other things. And up until now, it's worked pretty well because the base is essentially engineered to do whatever Rush Limbaugh tells them to do. This is not an accident. And this is where David Frum, the gargantuan lie of omission that everyone on the right now commits on a daily basis, because nobody, not Kathleen Parker, not David Frum, not David Brooks, not Ron Fournier, none of them will talk about what happened before 2009. If you were an innocent reader in from another planet, you would assume the Republican Party just showed up from out of town in 2009, fully formed.
Yeah.
And they just started doing this crazy stuff. And for some reason, the base is alienated from the donor class, and they don't talk to each other. And they hate each other. And into this mix comes this horrible person named Donald Trump. And David Frum, who actively participated in the creation of the modern conservative movement and the modern Republican Party, will not, on pain of losing his thumbs, allow for the fact that the Republican Party existed and was a rapidly metastasizing cancer prior to the presidency of Barack Obama.
Right.
It simply cannot be allowed to be discussed. And it's, you know, he's senior editor. So he got his article exactly the way he wanted. I'm sure it's the cover of the magazine. He will dine out on it for the next month and a half. He has been applauded about his, you know, Josh Barrow, also a former conservative, also routinely unshaven, also an MSNBC regular, applauded his insightful, awesome article. And I tweeted back to Josh Barrow, who, mind you, I say this in the same sense that I would say I scribble on the highway underpass. These people never, ever, ever respond to my emails, my posts, my tweets, our podcast, anything. They never, ever respond, because why would they?
Yeah.
But I just recommend, if you'd like a critique of the Republican Party as it stands today, you could read David Frum, or you could read any liberal day of any week dating back to the dawn of blogging. And I actually went back to Steve Gilliard's old blog and found a comment I had made that he lifted out of the comment section.
This was before you got kicked out of his blog and forced to write your own blog.
But this was the sort of the tenor of the comment section of liberal blogs in 2005. That's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I assure you, we saw it coming long before there were things that we could hit publish on and have our every word and, you know, thought instantly published to the world. Liberals have been saying this for a long, 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 long time. And you don't even have to go back to 2005 to see that liberals were right. Go back to June.
Yeah.
In June.
Yeah. This June.
This June. Yes. When all the pundits on the face of the earth were smirking and laughing and making fun of Donald Trump and look at his funny hair. He hired a bunch of people to come down the escalator. Ha, ha, ha. Look at this twit. Well, he's going to be Herman Cain, or he's going to be Newt Gingrich. He'll come and go. It'll be fine. And pretty much right down the line, the liberal people who are never allowed on television and are never allowed to talk at, who are never allowed across the table from some lying shitbag like David Frum, said, no. You don't understand. He might lose. Anybody might lose. But Donald Trump is the goddamn Republican Party.
That's,
and here's why.
Point.
And, of course, that opinion was absolutely censored from any conversation anyone was having right up until, geez, a week ago, when suddenly Kathleen Parker and David Frum and a whole bunch of other people suddenly wasn't going anywhere. Hello?
You went blank. Suddenly, all of a sudden, Kathleen Parker realized.
Suddenly, all the serious conservatives noticed that he wasn't going anywhere and all decided to write deep, thoughtful pieces about what's really going on without ever mentioning the Republican Party or its history.
Again.
Again, yep. again. Which brings us...
But that gets accolades and this bold, honest review, you know, of, oh, David Frum is telling the truth about politics in America today.
Yep.
When really he's not.
No.
It's the same lie. It's the same cover-up.
Well, I haven't mentioned David Brooks in a while, and I won't, except to say that it's the same lie David Brooks has been telling since 2006.
Yeah.
Which is there was no Republican Party. The past never happened. We are not going to discuss things I wrote, things I said, things I did, all the shit that went on prior to this arbitrary moment in time, after which I think we can all agree that both sides are to blame for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the lie that they've all stuck to. And that's why that is why MSNBC is methodically weeding out liberal voices, canceling liberal shows and replacing them with Mark Halperin and evermore Chuck Todd. Because who doesn't want Chuck Todd 5 days a week instead of just one day a week? That's why David.
Well, and I love the image you had of MSNBC nailing their coffin shut from the inside.
I was on the Nicole Sandler show earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggested that you and I and she go to Netroots Nation. And and maybe someone from MSNBC will be, who knows? Maybe a Chris Hayes will be there.
I doubt it.
Maybe a Rachel Maddow will show up and we can sort of ply them with drinks and say, okay, tell us for real. What the hell is going on?
See, you're not wanting, you're not even hoping that they would turn a camera on us. Yeah. You're just, would like to get them alone.
I would like, I would like them to say, you're right, they're fucking everywhere. You know, Andy Lack came in and just shit all over everything. It's a conservative hellhole. All of your, because really, deductive reasoning, just observing the reality of what's been going on that station, takes you to that place anyway. It's pretty clear that, they have every intention of slowly terminating any liberal voice on television, ever, anywhere. At the moment when it is becoming most clear that the liberal, I'm sorry, did I say conservative? They're working, it's pretty clear that the plan is to eradicate liberal voices from television entirely. At the same moment when it's becoming painfully clear that the only people who have foreseen what was going to happen with the Republican Party and have been right all along are those very people whose voices they are systematically
silencing.
And that's horrifying. It also means that we are not obliged to take people who work for MSNBC or any other station seriously as journalists anymore. They are part of the problem. They are part of a conspiracy. If it's out in the open, I don't know how it can be considered a, you know, a secret conspiracy, but it's certainly part of a collective effort to pretend that the shit that's happening right in front of us isn't happening. And which brings us to Chris Matthews.
Oh my goodness. Who really is kind of, I think in his latest comment, which thank you for sending that to us on Twitter, the comment that somehow every other politician in America is boring.
Yeah.
And therefore that, you know, it really was a, this is totally not our fault. Donald Trump is completely not our fault, says the man who put an hour-long infomercial on Donald Trump on Tuesday night. It's not my fault. It's just everyone is so boring besides Donald Trump that he's broken the mold. And that means that we have to cover him.
We have to. We have no choice. We have to. The media does it, you know, because everyone else in politics, you know, it's just a boring creep.
You can't name three congressmen. No one can name three congressmen because they're all so boring. So, yeah, but you can, Chris Matthews.
Well,
and you've had him on your show. And now it's just Trump all the time. Yeah. So.
And I'm sure he, you know, I'm sure someone in his life threw a drink in his face over the fact that he basically forced his entire net red force. He got his entire network to pimp his god awful, ghastly 1 hour Trump infomercial all day, every day. And then it was that's what it was. And now he's got to defend the fact that he really is just a ratings whore. He's just an out and out total ratings whore. And he doesn't, he wants to be thought of as a serious journalist or a serious something or somebody whose opinion matters, which he isn't and wasn't and never has been. And I don't see why, frankly, he cares. His entire shtick is inviting people on his show and then talking over them.
Yes, yes.
until they agree with him, and then he lets them leave.
To the point where he will parody himself on Alpha House.
Yeah.
And everyone knows what the game is.
Yeah.
You know, that this is Chris Matthews talking over people, because that's all he does. Yeah.
As I mentioned.
I want to talk about Alpha House for a minute, if you don't mind.
No, Chris Matthews combines all the unpleasant traits of a belligerent Irish drunk, except the drinking. and he does it on purpose. It's an act. It might be how he is in person, but it fits perfectly with the new MSNBC business model of aggressively driving away every liberal that they have left.
Mm-hmm.
So way to go. It's a win-win. So yes, Alpha House.
Well, again, we thank him on the Science Fiction University part of our show, but thank you to Steve. Listener Steve sent us a Roku wand thingy to plug into our TV. And so we've been able to watch Netflix and Amazon Prime on our television without interruption and all the glitches that were going on with our Wii U and Wii. But we did get a chance to go through both seasons of Alpha House. And I wanted to talk for a minute about the John Goodman character, Senator Gil John from
Biggs.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
Gil John Biggs, who is, this show is perfectly cast and is well worth watching. But Giljohn turns out to be the Republican with a conscience. It's really very West Wing in terms of inventing this Southern Republican who all of a sudden wakes up and realizes, no, government spending that I brought back to my state is a good thing. And I'm going to work on that. And I'm going to vote for things. And I'm going to work with people and not just vote no on everything. I'm going to resist this Tea Party BS. And the way that he talks about it, because he is brought onto cable news to talk about it, because he frames it as a both-sider situation. And it is so funny, and it's so sharp. The satire in this is so sharp, because what he says is, well, you've got the Democrats on one side and the Tea Party on the other, and as a Republican, I'm in the middle.
I can reach across both aisles.
I can reach across both sides.
There's two,
people together.
There's two aisles. There's not just one, there's two aisles, and I'm right in the
middle.
I'm right smack in the middle. And he says, you know, I'm getting in trouble for being in favor of things Republicans used to be in favor of.
Right. EPA,
cap and trade,
was created by Nixon. Cap and trade was supported by everybody.
Infrastructure,
who was a Republican.
Highways, all the stuff that suddenly is monstrous and poison.
But see, that is a model. If someone could actually do that, and I mean, the Tea Party is a made up mythical thing anyway. These are all George W. Bush voters,
right,
who, as you said, it's the tea belly sneeches. They just removed their Bush T-shirt or their Bush bumper sticker from their car, and all of a sudden, they're Tea Party.
Yeah.
And it was a created thing by Fox News to make it seem like, you know, it's a brand new party. Oh, and the media went along with it.
It sure did. Right along.
And so I think if you did then start to portray the Tea Party as something other than Republicans, since that's what everybody has believed all along anyway, well, you know, there's this radical Tea Party and then there's the Democrats on the other side. And we're in the middle. We're the reasonable center.
Right, right.
As Republicans that want to use government spending to stimulate the economy.
Yeah. There's a name for people like that. They're called Democrats.
They're called Clinton Democrats.
Yeah, they're called Democrats. They're called.
And who should know that more than Chris Matthews, for God's sakes?
Obama Democrat.
Yeah.
I mean, Barack, yeah. I still, you know, Barack Obama is a very skilled Eisenhower Republican.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I'll go to my grave thinking that. And he, you know, he was in the right place at the right time. And he also completely missed what was going on politically to our detriment.
Yeah.
He failed to keep America safe from crazy people on the right, from the insanity of the Republican Party, by refusing to acknowledge they existed.
Yep.
And that was to our collective detriment. But I want to point out just one moment from Alpha House where Giljohn Biggs goes home and is in the barbershop with his African aide, his aide from his body man, the guy who goes with him everywhere, who's, I believe, from Africa.
Yeah, he's an immigrant. He's not just African American. He's an immigrant.
But he's a ball player.
But he's a basketball player. Yeah,
he's a contributor. He's
one of the good ones, as they say. Yes.
And all of these good
on the show
are sitting around the barbershop complaining about the people, and they're saying shit like, I earned my food stamps.
And my disability.
And my disability. I earned my unemployment, unlike those people. And finally, Giljohn just has to get up and leave.
Well, and they're talking about those people being the illegals and so forth. And then they switch over and start talking about their buddy's tobacco farm. And thank God he was able to get some illegals in there because now he can afford to run it.
Right. You know, and
without irony, no irony.
And some poor bitch farm failed because he didn't get a cost of living increase on his agricultural subsidy.
It's ag subsidy.
Because that's good government. That's what government's supposed to do. It's supposed to pay me money, not you money.
Right, right.
And our hero just couldn't stand it. He finally got up and had to leave. And he says, you know, it used to be the racism was right on the surface. You know, it was more honest. But these people are choking to death on their own hypocrisy.
Yep.
And that is what really is at the heart of the Tea Party, the Republican Party, which is essentially the Tea Party, is people who are so completely lost, who were so down the rabbit hole, they can never come back. Because if they ever started turning around and listening to the shit that comes out of their own mouth yesterday, they just have a deep-seated white supremacist belief that they deserve shit and nobody else does.
Yep.
And they will go to their graves, hopefully sooner rather than later, and get the hell out of the way so the next generation can come in with a broom and clean up their mess. They just cannot accept the fact that they are the problem. And, and again, it isn't a matter of rolling them back on guns. It isn't a matter of confronting them with facts, because that's never going to work. And because at the bottom of it all, what they would have to do is what David Frum would have to do. They'd have to come out and say, someday, somewhere, in some format, liberals are right all along. And they would rather burn this country to the ground than ever admit that people...
Well, they'd rather vote against their own interests. And this is where Donald Trump has been the smart salesman. Yeah. Because he admits he's not going to cut Social Security and Medicare.
He's going to make it awesome. And,
yeah. He's going to make it awesome. And, you know, a lot of commentators said he's going to replace the U.S. Congress with something terrific.
Something terrific.
You know?
Right.
And he's just a con man. So, but he is exposing both the corruption of the political process in terms of money, and also the fact that GOP ideas are terrible.
Terrible. And they've always been terrible.
The economic plans of the Republican Party are terrible. So I don't blame Republicans for Republicans who depend on Social Security and cannot bring themselves to vote Democrat, you know, for the Democrat Party, because they've been brainwashed, from therefore falling into the Trump camp. I'm with Stephen Colbert in that respect, that, you know, if that's the only place they have left to go, if they absolutely cannot bring themselves to admit they were ever wrong about voting for George W. Bush or voting for the R party, then they have nowhere else to go. And who is the blonde commenter from the Chicago papers? She writes for
Lynn Sweet,
the Tribune. Lynn Sweet.
She's a reporter. She's a real
journalist. She was on MSNBC this week talking about how resentment toward the Republican establishment, that when you talk to people at Trump rallies, they don't initially express their anger about Barack Obama. I guess everyone just assumes that that's who you're mad at.
Baseline.
They're really mad at Mitt Romney. They're really mad at Karl Rove. They're really mad at Fox News for lying to them that Mitt Romney was going to win last time. He was going to beat Obama.
Yep.
And that's the anger and the resentment that comes out at Trump rallies is not. And I don't blame them for being angry that they were lied to by the establishment.
They were promised. They were promised.
Well, and everyone, you know, the entire primary season of 2012, the Republican primary season was not Romney.
Right.
You know, who was the current not Romney? Because everyone was voting for either for Romney or not Romney.
Right.
And so you had this chain of alternatives, including Newt Gingrich.
Right.
And it was Becky Stan Herman Cain. You know, you had these totally unqualified people winning primaries, include, and we need to correct it. You know, Newt Gingrich won the South Carolina primary in 2012. I misspoke in an earlier podcast about that.
Liar.
I'm a liberal liar. So and someone will clip that out of the podcast. She admits it. Blue Gal admits it. It'll be on Red State tomorrow.
They were desperate to not have Romney.
Yeah.
They wanted someone who don't.
And then they were told when he got the nomination, because he had the most money,
he had to.
You have to go in line because we have to defeat Barack Obama. And then they were promised by Fox News for days and days and days that Romney was going to win in a landslide.
That's right.
And he didn't.
And
you can and the presumption that you can lie to the rubes, you can lie to your listeners. They just took it for the Roger Ailes team took it for granted that you could just tell them what they wanted to hear and it would be okay.
And they forgot.
But they forgot that the election's right there in front of you.
Well, they forgot that they don't get to decide who's a rhino anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
Rush Limbaugh gets to decide who's a rhino.
And Drudge gets
and
to
Drudge
decide.
They
who's
don't
a
get
rhino.
To decide. Yep. They get to profit from it. They get to help, you know, bring in the harvest. They get to fertilize and help, you know, grow the crop. But the minute Romney turned out to be the hollow jerk that he always, they needed someone else to hate. And they already, they were fully stocked. You know, the shelves of Obama hatred were,
I'm sorry.
And the only, yep.
You're fading out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Say that sentence again.
The shelves at the Obama hate shop are fully stocked. Mm-hmm. Room for Obama hatred. They voted to get rid of Obamacare 72 times. They voted to shut down the government. You know, they know the drill. They know the Benghazi drill. That was no longer satisfying. They needed someone to blame for Romney losing because they sold out their principles, their horrible, horrible principles, to back Romney solely because he promised he would take out Obama. And they were stuck with the Kenyan usurper for 4 more years, seizing their guns and making their kids gay. So who are we going to blame for that? Well, the Republican establishment. And the Republican establishment has come to believe that since we grew these idiots, we own these idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump came in and said, no, they're chumps. I understand chumps. I've been shucking them my entire life. I can come right in here and poach your entire crop of idiots because I know how the game is played. I know what they want to hear. And I have the money and the fuck you attitude not to care what Roger Ailes has to say. And it worked. And I just want to remind you that before we leave this topic, I wrote a little thing about T. Boone Pickens.
Yeah.
But the run-up to T. Boone Pickens was the fact that the tribe that rubs shit in their hair, trademark, drift blast, isn't just a place for your drunk Bircher uncle. There are crackpot billionaires who are also members of the tribe. And since Christmas is the time when we traditionally raise a glass to our beloved crackpot American right-wing billionaires, I would remind you that just before the election, when things looked like they were falling apart, it was not T. Boone Pickens. It was Jack Welch, former chief executive of General Electric, who was absolutely sure that the Obama saboteurs, that the monsters inside the Obama administration were secretly cooking the numbers, were secretly making the State Department and the Congressional Budget Office were making up job figures that were better than they were just so that uppity Negro could win. And, you know, this is a guy who ran GE.
Yeah.
He is, and he's fucking insane. And the problem with the Conservative Party, it's full of absolutely irresponsibly crazy billionaires who will spend unlimited amounts of money to turn the world into their Disneyland. So this time around, it's T. Boone Pickens, who has a slightly different strategy. And his strategy is, you know what? Now, T. Boone Pickens, a little background. He's a corrupt, insane, right-wing billionaire who was an oil and gas man for years. He's a big Clinton hater. He footed a big chunk of the bill to swift vote John Kerry. And he's just a douchebag from start to finish, top to bottom, an awful, awful person. But he's noticed that a lot of the people, and this is a guy I'm reading the article now, who was flirting, who donated to Jeb Bush early on and flirted with Ben Carson.
Flirted
with Ben Carson. Ben Carson. This guy thought, at least for a hot minute, Ben Carson might be the guy. Well, it turned out, so he's noticed that this other right-wing billionaire, crackpot billionaire, is now in danger of hijacking his entire party, taking it all away from him. So what T. Boone Pickens would like to do is have a bipartisan panel to screen candidates for president. He'd like to get rid of the whole primary process, apparently, you know, where voters go out and pick things and choose stuff. Because the voters that he and people like him spent so many years turning into mindless fucking sheep who will do anything they're told are not doing what T. Boone Pickens told them to do anymore. So let's scrap that whole proposal. And let's have a nice bipartisan, that's the word that made me laugh out loud, panel to screen out the unqualified candidates, meaning Donald Trump.
Yep.
We only want small bore lunatics that I can control, not the big crazy people that that don't give a shit what I have to say. And that's, and again, this is watching from Kathleen Parker to David Frum to T. Boone Pickens, watching these people cope with the fact that the mob they created has turned on them. And they dare not say that it's their fault. Or who knows, they might actually lose their job sucking at the teeth of the wingnut welfare state.
Yep. Gotta say both sides. And, you know, Santa got in trouble for that back during the Civil War. He tried to be above politics when the South seceded from the Union in 1860.
But you want to do a quick, might as well mention Ron Fournier.
Well, we can just go backwards and talk about Ron Fournier, Santa wants global warming to be acknowledged as reality.
By Congress.
Says Ron Fournier. Yeah. who got in his face about that?
Oh, I don't remember. Someone on the Twitter pointed out that...
It was Washington Post. It was...
it was Washington Post.
It was Plumline.
Yeah.
We got to just start over with this segment. This is the Ron Fournier segment of our show.
I'm sorry. I took us off track. I apologize.
No, that's all right. I did too.
Steve Bannon?
No. Steve Bannon works for Rachel Maddow. Greg Sargent. Okay. Which brings us to Ron Fournier on the Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, we'll finish with Ron Fournier because he talked about Santa Claus today on the Twitter. I got to find Ron Fournier's original tweet here.
We wouldn't mention it, but Ron Fournier is the poor man's David Brooks.
He's the poor man's David Brooks.
He's everywhere,
yeah.
And his entire shtick is both sides, always both sides, which means he'll never miss a meal, ever, ever.
Never, ever, ever miss a meal. Okay.
So on the Twitter.
Ron Fournier says, Santa: all I want for Christmas is a Congress that recognizes climate change as a threat to his creation. Uh-huh. Santa's creation? That was confusing to me.
I'm guessing God's creation.
I think it is capital H, but he doesn't say that. He just says, Santa,
well,
all I want for Christmas is a Congress that recognizes climate change as a threat to his creation. Okay, it's Twitter. I get that.
Twitter has 140 characters.
Yeah, you got that.
Has no character. So.
Plumline, which is Greg Sargent at The Plumline GS on Twitter, said maybe he should support the political party that agrees with him. And Ron Fournier replies, maybe he is above party.
Capital he.
Capital he, so meaning God is above party.
God or Santa.
But I stuck with the Santa thing because he started with Santa.
Right.
And I said, you know, Santa tried that both-siderist above party thing when the South seceded from the Union in 1860, and Mrs. Claus hasn't let him forget it.
Well, and there was a swift and hilarious pile-on, because really, it looked like, I mean, clearly Ron Fournier was either trying to play both-siderist with Santa Claus or God.
Or God,
over the issue of climate change. And it's like, dude, one side thinks it's real, one side thinks it's not. You pretty much have to pick a political party. But Ron Fournier will never acknowledge that there's any difference, that there's anything going on the right that's not equally bad on the left, or he loses his job. And so he can't even acknowledge that either God or Santa Claus occasionally takes sides. And Rude Pundit pointed out, you know, actually God takes sides all the time. New Testament God is really in favor of poor people and not so much rich people. And I added to the conversation about, he also didn't like hypocrites or Pharisees, which is the Bible version of Ron Fournier. And
absolutely.
It's that reflex. It's that trained up at the meat of your muscle level, that muscular memory where you always have to both sides everything. Because the minute you start letting people believe that one side is wrong, and frequently, and one side is not, then you get tossed, and then you end up as Norman Ornstein. You end up cast out of the village. Nobody's going to invite you on TV anymore. Nobody will let you write columns anymore, and you have to go find honest work someplace.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitties are Roland of Gilead, named after the protagonist of Stephen King's The Dark Tower series, and Gaius Baltar of Battlestar Galactica. So we have Gaius and Roland. Am I saying that right?
Roland? I think it's Roland.
Roland. So this week's internet kitties are Roland of Gilead and Gaius Baltar. And Roland is named after the protagonist of Stephen King's The Dark Tower series. And of course, Gaius Baltar is from Battlestar Galactica. You know, Gaius in Battlestar Galactica isn't always the nicest guy, but the ladies love him.
He does. Ladies, so, especially the imaginary that. Lady.
In his head. Yeah. We love these beautiful cats. They are Siamese and just lovely. So go visit them at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Union's letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. It is not too late to mail us a Christmas card. It is not too late for me to mail you back a card or email. So feel free to write us. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage, don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. Throughout the weekend, you can send an Amazon gift card by email. And let me help you if you have forgotten somebody, or if you get a gift for Christmas and you didn't give a gift, you can email them a gift card, that person, and say, I got your gift and thank you so much. I've been thinking about you all winter long, and here is a gift card for you.
All afternoon.
I want you to get something nice for yourself, and that's it. There's your script. You don't have to apologize for forgetting somebody. You open the gift from somebody and send them a gift card. Go to our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, click on the Amazon link, and order them an email gift card, and that way you didn't forget. We do believe in buying local, but all the stores are closed on Christmas Day.
Right.
So, on Christmas Day, we believe in shopping Amazon with our link, if your alternative is a big box store, which is closed anyway.
Right.
So,
go over to Amazon
and give away gift cards. It's fine. Go to our link first, and we do get credit. We get a single digit percentage of whatever you give as the gift card. Doesn't cost you anything extra. So we appreciate your support in that way. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a financial contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our postal address and our PayPal information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or give us a thumbs up on Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are clearing their holiday palates by binge-watching Dean Martin's Celebrity Roast.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University Dogfaced Herman, who we love so much. Merry Christmas, Dogfaced Herman.
Merry Christmas, Dogfaced Herman.
Dogfaced Herman says, and now for something completely different, dystopia. I think this is like the fourth or fifth time we've done dystopia. Let's just go for it. There's five clips. You have to identify what is going on, who this clip is, what it is. There's TV and movies in this one.
Quote, youngest child, I have a question.
She always starts everything with, I have a question.
And she will. She'll be a UN translator.
She will.
I have a question.
Are
any of these Santa Claus versus the Martian?
No.
Okay, then.
No, so although that is a dystopia right there. You know.
Great. Any of them involve Paul Newman and Mae West?
No. And they aren't the day the reindeer died either.
Okay. That's my short list for...
for holiday viewing?
Holiday dystopian viewing, yeah. That involve in any way science fiction. So, all right.
Number one.
Dr. Montoya discussed cesarean section with you.
I'm wide enough. There's nothing in the way. I'm just waiting on here like everybody else. Who knows what for?
Maybe that's why you're 2 weeks overdue.
If you were in utero and you had any choice about the matter, Would you be dying to be born into a world like this?
Do you think your baby's deciding whether or not to be born?
Do you think I'm holding back by force of will, Dr. Oakes? Bad toilet training.
No, I think you've got to be willing to let your baby come, whether you like it or not. You're holding back hope.
Hope for what? What do you think's going to happen out there? You think we're going to sweep up the dead and fill in a couple of holes and build some supermarkets? You think all those people left alive out there are going to say, oh, I'm sorry, it wasn't my fault. Let's kiss and make up. We knew the score. We knew all about bombs. We knew all about fallout. We knew this could happen for 40 years. Nobody was interested.
Oh, yeah. This was TV.
This is TV.
This was TV at the heart of the Reagan era.
It was. When we were afraid of something completely different than we're afraid of today, yes.
I had to explain to Middlechild about duck and cover and about bomb shelters. You know, go look for that little trefoil fallout thing in your school because your school's old enough to have one. And, you know, we worry about school shootings now, and rightly so. But, you know, when I was a kid, we worried about the end of civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the day after.
That's right.
That had to be Jason Robards.
That is correct.
Yeah. Was it? And Jane Alexander, was she in that?
I think so.
Pretty sure she was, too. And I don't know. Probably there was a Brolin in there, maybe. Probably.
Anyway.
World. Never mind. But yeah, this was a...
This was a big event. This was a really big event. Yeah. Television event. I don't believe in television events, but this one was sort of a television event at the time. 1983.
And it was the nuking of Lawrence, Kansas.
Right.
Among many, many other things. But it was...
The nuking of the world, yeah. Yeah.
And most science fiction takes place either leading up to, that would be Failsafe,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, in the long shadow afterwards where giant mutant this and that come to life.
Right, right.
Horrible day-to-day dying from radiation poisoning and fallout and illness and so forth, that would happen, the long, slow death of civilization after a nuclear war. And it scared the shit out of people, and rightly so.
All right, number two.
It will never work. People don't want war. It destroyed this planet, its people, and all records of past civilization.
Not all records, as you'll soon find out.
Attention! Leaders of tomorrow's master race! The time has come, as I promised. The time when I reveal to you, my loyal followers, the ancient secret of war. The key to creating hysteria, fear. Gods. Behold!
Thank you.
idea. It sounds really familiar. Like I might have been at a drive-through and
a drive-in. You mean not a drive-through? You mean a drive-in? Maybe for you it was a drive-through. I don't know.
I might not have been paying complete attention to the movie.
What were you doing in 1977?
Just exactly that.
Drive-through. Yeah, it's drive Wizards. In. Wizards. 1977. Doc Bass-Turman says Ralph Bakshi's best movie. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Number three.
This place is built on lies and suffering. How could you do what you did to us?
The world was dying. We took all that was good and made an oasis here. We few, the rich, the powerful, the clever, cut ourselves off to guard the knowledge and treasures of civilization as the world plunged into a dark age.
Well, that's Sean Connery.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, to my knowledge, there's only three science fiction movies that Sean Connery was involved with. There's probably a fourth.
This is not Highlander.
No, it's not Highlander. And it's not Outland. And since Sean Connery only does one word titles, it must be Zardoz.
You are really good at that.
What? Guessing science fiction?
Sean Connery. You're as good at Sean Connery as you are at Bill Clinton. That's pretty good.
It's part of my background. You know. That's why, you know, send more whiskey.
All right. Number four.
Craddock, tell us. How did it happen? The invasion of Earth, everything.
You've been on a moon station or something?
Yes, quite so.
Yes.
Well, meteorites came first. And Earth was bombarded with them about 10 years ago. Cosmic storm, the scientists called it. Well, the meteorite stopped, everything settled down, and then people began to die of this new kind of plague.
Yes, that explains your poster, dear boy. Germ bombs, hmm?
And the sky just waiting for Earth to get weaker. Whole continents of people were wiped out. Asia, Africa, South America. Used to say the Earth had a smell of death about it.
It's definitely Doctor Who.
It's Doctor Who.
It sounds like the movie I remember seeing. It's a Dalek movie. I don't remember what it was.
Dalek Invasion of Earth, 1964. The first Doctor, the second Dalek story, and the last appearance of the Doctor's granddaughter, Susan. Unless you count those 2 seconds from the name of the Doctor, yes.
And of course, you know, a purist would, I suppose.
Do you count that or not? We can debate that later. Okay.
I'm not that pedantic. But yeah, I recall there was a Doctor Who movie. I think this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure.
I think Middle Child had a t-shirt with this movie title on it. You know, the whole Dalek thing is big. Our grandchildren will have hand-knit Dalek dresses. Our granddaughters will have those. They will.
Or,
there's a pattern out there already.
I'm sure there are 9 patterns out there.
The Venn diagram of knitters and Doctor Who geeks overlaps quite a bit.
Yeah.
All right. Number five, the last one. Number five.
The rules of the Big Hunt are quite easy, yet they are of great importance. The 21st century shall be the one that has legalized violence. Rule number one, each member is obliged to undertake 10 hunts, 5 as a hunter, 5 as a victim, alternately. Each pair of hunter and victim is chosen electronically by a computer in Geneva. Rule number two, the hunter shall know all about his victim. Name, address, habits too. Rule number three, the victim shall not be told who his hunter is. He must find out and kill him. Rule number four. The winner of each separate hunt will win money. The one who comes out alive after the 10th hunt, he shall receive honors and $1,000,000.
Oh, I got no idea. I can guess the time period because there's an electronic computer.
Yes.
In Geneva. So It's got to be pre-1974.
Yeah, it's 65.
65, yeah, okay.
An electronic computer, yeah.
An electronic computer. Not an abacus? Yeah, no. It's an electronic computer, and I'm sure it's big and impressive.
But it generates a lot of heat.
It does. And it has a lot of blinky lights and tapes that spin around and around because that's the only way you know it's computing. But other than that, I got no clue.
Well, Dogface Herman says, this is an underrated movie. Check it out if you can. It's called The Tenth Victim from 1965. All right. We will check that out. The Tenth Victim. Thank you, Dogface Herman. And now we also want to thank our listener, Steve.
Yes, Steve.
Steve sent us a Roku plug-in streaming thingy. For our the TV in the bedroom. Because the TV in the living room doesn't have a HDMI plug. It's too old.
It has rabbit ears and two balls.
Pretty much. We had to rig it to take the Wii. Yeah. So anyway.
You have the oldest child up on the roof with an antenna. Just a little to the left.
I actually like having a big boat anchor TV in the living room because
as an anti-theft device.
As an anti-theft device. Yeah. The only home break-ins that we've had on our street have been stealing the flat screen TV. Yeah, so I think, you know, when someone comes to the door, a lot of times you worry that they're scanning your house to see what you got, and if they see that TV in the living room, they know, oh, these are Poe people.
Yeah. You go look for the hobo language on the curb in front of our house that just says, move on. You
know, move on.
They'll give you cookies. They'll give you a meal, but they're nothing worth stealing in this casa.
Nothing worth. There really isn't. And so I like having old laptop, used laptops, and a big TV in our living room.
And
anyway.
Like Ron Swanson, I only bury decoy gold in the backyard. in the backyard.
In the backyard, yeah. So, but this Roku plug.
Yes.
Steve sent us. Thank you so much, Steve. It's working.
Yep, it's working great.
And we got to see, and we're going to talk about Alpha House during political podcasts, but right now we are in the middle of watching Jessica Jones, which, as one listener pointed out to us on Twitter, is not for the kids.
No,
got it.
Definitely got it. Totally. Yeah. Don't worry. And not the middle, but we're committed.
Did we watch the third one last night? Third episode, I think. Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah. And then we also finished watching Man in the High Castle, and it didn't interrupt like it does on the Wii in the living room. It didn't pause and then go back to where we had watched it before, and it interrupted all the time. I think the Wii just kind of resets itself every once in a
Suddenly,
while.
Suddenly, we're in the middle of watching It's a Tiny, Tiny Christmas, Charlie Brown, or whatever. But I can pretty much unreservedly recommend Man in the High Castle.
Oh, yeah.
Other than the fact that the medium involved is not a book, and that there's a lot more involved in the story.
Well, and I was really impressed with Rufus Sewell, who is the star power of this show. Rufus Sewell in this movie, TV show. Television event, right?
Television event, it was.
I hate that term. Yeah. He plays a really nasty Nazi.
Yeah, not a good Nazi. Not a good Nazi.
No. Although it turns out there are degrees of Nazis in this show.
Yeah.
But he is not a good person. He's a Nazi, and you wind up by the 10th episode of this show really caring what's going to happen to him, and. Not that he won't necessarily get his just desserts. I mean, you're not sort of rooting for him to succeed, but you care. You're just invested in how things are going to turn out for him and his family and the home life of this Nazi general. You know, who's really high up in the Nazi world. Yeah,
it's father knows best. You know, as I said, fatherland knows best.
Fatherland knows best,
It's this cheerful suburban dad who just wants Junior to do good in school.
Right, right.
And whose wife's adoring, but and kind of understands his problems.
Lucille Ball. Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's sort of just, the homemaker, happy
Nazi.
Homemaker.
Living
and they're all Nazis,
There are degrees of horribleness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the way that each character is motivated, mm-hmm. and is limited and has made certain decisions.
Yeah, and is trapped. I think you said you understand the trap that every single character is in.
Yep. And everyone's weakness is someone else's leverage.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so that's all we're going to say about it. It's worth seeing.
Yep.
It's on Amazon Prime.
I'll say this. Since it ends pretty much where the book ends, let me put it that way.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how they're going to do a season two.
Yeah, and they are going to do a season two, which is really odd. Yeah, but they are going to somehow go beyond Philip Dick's published work. And you did read up on this. Philip Dick was planning to do a sequel.
He was.
And he just couldn't bring himself to research Nazi Germany anymore. I totally understand that.
And if you're familiar with the book, it's one of the sort of canonical works of science fiction, which is why everybody's like freaked out about doing this. You know, when Dune
was... Well, it took a long time for someone to do this, because doing it wrong was something that would be really easy to have happen, I think.
And the timeline, the who's in charge of the Third Reich and what the power struggles are, is different.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
you can understand.
Well, and the Japanese have a very big role in this, too.
Well, that's also true in the book, but the internal power struggles going on back in the homeland, back in the fatherland, are different.
Yeah.
Slightly different enough that you will notice if you read the book. But you understand why everyone is doing exactly what they're doing. And they don't spare the atrocities.
It's excellent. I enjoyed it very much.
Totally commit to if evil took over the world and became everyday banality, what would it look like?
What would it look like? And the production values in this are very good. Parts of the world have become modernized to the point where you realize it is 1960.
Yeah.
And then other parts of it are really stuck in the 40s. And some of the technology is stuck. And you sort of get that. You're like, oh, that happened, but this didn't happen.
Right.
You know, and why. And so I understand why it took so long to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why this works, because the people who put this together understand storytelling. And that is really key to making a success of any of these adaptations. That was the secret of the new Star Wars is, you know, J.J. Abrams knows what a story is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the secret of Jessica Jones as well, is understanding basic character and plot and making that work. You called Jennifer Jones Mrs. Robot.
Yeah.
And I love that. That is so
I also want to,
accurate.
Before we, because I do want to talk about that for a minute as well, before leaving behind The Man in the High Castle.
Okay.
Look for the little, if you watch it, look for the little touches.
Yeah.
Look for the main New York airport is the George Lincoln Rockwell Airport.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
George Lincoln Rockwell was the head of the American Nazi Party.
Yeah.
So
there are lots of clever little touches
that
throughout.
They're very carefully done, and my hat's off to. Yeah, Jennifer Jones is as deeply embedded in Marvel Comics New York as Mr. Robot is in the real world New York, which is basically the same New York. It's a very good show. And
New York is a character in the story just like in Mr. Robot. Yeah, yeah.
Really well done. They both have powers. She has superpowers. But it's this wonderful, I'm not, you know, giving anything away is not fair to anybody who's not watched it. But it really is above, you know, high above them are the Avengers, costumed superheroes who are out there fighting supervillains.
Yeah, the Hulk and everybody else. Yeah.
And down the streets.
There is awareness of them in this world.
They're in the background.
They're
far away, you know, like the, I'm going to blow the Russian expression, high up and far away. That's not the expression I'm thinking of. But down in the street where people live and bad people do bad things and good people do bad things. And it's a crime drama. It's Sam Spade.
Mm-hmm. She has to investigate bad people and find out why they're doing what they're doing. She's a PI. Yeah.
And it really is very, very faithful to the PI genre.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
But these people have some superhuman abilities that aren't amazing. I mean, they're useful and they're very, very important to the plot, but none of them are Thor. You know, none of them are that. They're just fighting their own sort of grim little battles in the alleyways. And it really is sort of the below decks story. You know, Star Trek is all about what's happening on the bridge. This is what happens below decks with the rest of the people and what's going on in their day-to-day lives. And it's very good. It's not for kids. Absolutely not for kids.
And this one is on Netflix, for those of you that are, for whom this is new. And the actress who plays Jessica Jones, she is a knitter. I just want to say she's a knitter. Okay.
Formerly known
You were saying that she's like Jesse Pinkman's old girlfriend.
She is Jesse. No, the actress is Jesse Pinkman's old girlfriend.
Oh, okay. Is Jesse?
Yes. Okay. The actress
she actually dated the guy who's played Jesse Pinkman, is what you're saying.
Who died in Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay.
Has been reborn.
From the OD.
Yes.
Okay, she played that, and now she's playing Jessica Jones.
Spoiler.
Spoiler. Okay.
You haven't seen Breaking Bad. I apologize. In retrospect,
Kristen Ritter, KRYSTEN, Ritter. I assume no relation to John Ritter, but she played Jesse Pinkman's dead girlfriend, the OD girlfriend. Yeah. We probably should do some sort of rules about spoilers, but a show that is over, where the finale has already aired months ago, I think you're okay.
Yeah. Well, when we walked out of the theater having watched Star Wars, and I was exclaiming loudly that Bruce Willis was dead the whole time, I think that's fair.
Rosebud was a sled!
Well, not really, but we couldn't say what Rosebud really was.
I know, really. The people that know what Rosebud really was, look it up, people. Luke Skywalker was Kaiser Soze the whole time, really? Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy New Year. We'll be back next week for New Year's Day.
Love you.
I love you, too. Merry Christmas, darling.
Bye.
Bye.